When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast with myself, Robbie Musto, and my mate as ever, Robbie Earle. And this is a summer update for everybody. We're going to talk about manager movement in the Premier League. Certainly Unai Emery going to Arsenal is a big story. We're going to reflect on the FA Cup final that saw Chelsea beat Manchester United 1-0. And of course, we will talk the UEFA Champions League final between Real Madrid and Liverpool. But before we get started, Robbie Earle, why don't we just say to our listeners what you've been up to since the season's finished. What have you been doing?
It's a good question, and my answer is BFG. B, beer. I've drank some beer, Robbie Musto. I've met up with some mates. We've been to pubs. We've drank a few beers, and we've caught up, obviously, at a mad end of the season. The F is the football. We've had lots of different games. I've seen some playoff games. I've seen FA Cup final. We've seen the Champions League final since we last finished. So there's been football sort of wall to wall. And then the G, probably the most important, was my daughter's graduation. So she graduated from college this year.
Congratulations.
So we had the whole ceremony. Yeah, great for her to have that done, 4-year degree now. And she's off into Europe to do an internship. So, yeah, plenty going on in the old household. But, yeah, great time. And looking forward to, obviously, a big summer of World Cup football too.
Yeah, mine's not that much different, really. I guess my letters will be a little bit different. I've got to start with M for Mexico. As soon as the season finished, mate, the kids are out of the house now at college, etc. And our oldest boy actually just graduated as well last few weeks. So we took them away to Mexico, had a nice week there, really nice, and enjoyed the weather there. And watched some sport, of course, when we were there. Again, like you, watched the football in the pubs, the Champions League in Phoenix Landing pub in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which was a brilliant atmosphere. Just very, very good. And we're getting our house ready to sell. So that's been kind of busy with what we've been doing as well. So, of course, there's always plenty of golf chucked in between, Robbie Earle. So,
expect any less.
Yeah. So fairly busy, actually, in the weeks following the end of the Premier League season.
And it's been busy football, and we're going to kick off, Rob. I think there's only one place to start, the Champions League final. Everybody was looking forward to this one. Liverpool versus Real Madrid. Madrid going for their third successive trophy. Liverpool looking to upset the odds in some respects. We probably started not favourites. Your takeaway from the game, Rob? Let's start.
Well, there's a lot. I think just in general, Rob, and maybe the best thing to do with this is to kind of go through the major incidents. But my first thoughts, we were so excited about this game, and we spoke many times about it, and I wanted Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp to approach the game that we know that they can, with high energy, with high pressing, because I didn't feel Real Madrid would be able to handle that very well. So, the first 30 minutes is probably our first little point of discussion, and I thought the first 30 minutes were excellent from Liverpool in terms of the way that they pressed Real Madrid. Any ball went up to those front players, they were first to it, they forced Real Madrid back, and actually made the Spanish team just sit back and be a little bit passive. Of Liverpool controlled possession a little bit, territory, which surprised me a little bit, but really pleased the way that they start the first 30 minutes. What did you think to the?
I think we agree the same thing. I mean, I actually went into the game fancying Liverpool to win if they retain their personality. And by that, I meant that they don't go into a deep shell and sit there and try and counter from there. Play with that energy, break balls up in midfield, drive forward. And I have to say, it was more the Liverpool attack we saw in the first 30 minutes than it was the Real Madrid attack. I mean, Ronaldo hardly had a touch in the first sort of 20 minutes of the game. I'm thinking, perfect start for Liverpool. Couldn't be any better. I think the attention of the Real Madrid defence. Got the midfield at that point looked like they've got a grip of the game. I'm kind of looking forward to how this half's going to finish, and then into the second half. I'm thinking, this is pretty good for Jurgen Klopp. And then Robbie Musto.
Yes, well,
the big thing happens.
Yeah, it does, and there's been a lot of talk on social media. Sergio Ramos, we know Rob is an aggressive, very good, very successful centre-back, and he plays with aggression, and his challenge, of course, on Mohamed Salah was a major factor in this game, the outcome, etc., etc., etc. We, of course, know that Mo Salah had to leave the field of play because of this shoulder injury. He tried his very best to stay in the game, but it wasn't to be. I think we've both done, I've certainly done both of my shoulders in a similar type of situation, so I know what it feels like. And for me, I mean, I'm not, I don't know what the extent of his injury, but it was kind of 3 or 4 weeks with my kind of separated shoulder. So, but I guess the challenge. So, you know, my opinion of this challenge was that it was dirty. And it was unnecessary, and it was just over the top in terms of aggression. Now, you know, I think I've looked at it a million times, like everybody has. And when you go and challenge a player like he did, and you link that arm, and he makes sure he still has that arm as he tucked in his left arm to his chest and made sure he had it, they're heading to the ground. I think he's thinking, I'm in a good spot here, and he's not. I've got his arm. We're both going to ground at pace. My weight's going to be on this. I think it was over-aggressive. And, I thought it was a dirty play. And that's the phrase.
So did you think it was worthy of obviously not even a red card? Are you saying that dirty?
No. It's not a red card dirty. Not a red card dirty. But I just thought it was unsporting, Rob. I mean, yellow card is cautions for unsporting. And a little bit reckless in the way that he pulled him down deliberately there. I just thought it was a bit naughty.
Naughty might be just about the right side of where I'm at. I mean, I think I slightly see it with a slightly different... There's no doubt that Sergio Ramos understood what he was doing by staying with, keeping hold of that arm, and then it was almost the way he used his body to kind of pin Salah down on the right-hand side. Yeah. So what he knows then is the left side of his body is going to be exposed to the fall. And because there's been some, I don't know if you've seen on social media, these examples of Ramos doing this in the past. It's something he's done when attackers go tight or try and go past him. He tries to link them and he tries to take them to ground. Now, where I agree is that it was aggressive in the way, but I don't think he could ever have thought, I'm going to catch his shoulder here or he's going to injure me. It's not in the way that somebody goes over the top of the ball with six studs and hurts somebody. I think he's defended in the way that he's defended. He's maybe taken a yellow card for it, thinking, I'll give Salah a bit of a jolt here and let's see what happens. I just felt it wasn't quite as maybe conceived or cunning as people thought. He's definitely gone to upset him, but I'm not quite sure it was as sort of dangerous.
Yeah, but you said that he knows what he's doing and he's forcing his arm. So that's not that's not right. That's not within the rules. That's not fair.
But I'm not saying it's fair, but I'm saying, listen, we have games. We've had... Yeah. We've looked in the past at people who've put their foot in, Rob, who've done things, and we've said, that's part of the game sometime, that's what you have to do to become winners, etc. And I'm not excusing Sergio Ramos but in any way. I still think it's an accident that Mo Salah's shoulders popped out, and I think it's hard for you to say that Sergio Ramos is at fault for that.
But the way he challenged him, that was always a possibility. Of course I understand that sometimes he does that 10 times in 10 games and the player might not get hurt. But it doesn't make it all right. It doesn't make it all right to challenge that way. It's like going in with a aggressive tackle and you miss the guy and that's still okay because you didn't hurt him. I mean, there will be times where it does hurt the player. This was one of those times. And for me, it was just, it's just unnecessary. Unnecessary, particularly the way that the game has gone in the Premier League and, of course, in European football. Sorry. It's a little less, you know, a little less kind of, is this stuff's allowed anymore?
If you're Real Madrid and you're Sergio Ramos, isn't it exactly the situation you'd want? Isn't it exactly what he would have liked to do to jolt Salah? Now, I don't think he meant to pop his shoulder. Whether his shoulder pops out and that, only maybe Ramos will know. But I just felt, I saw social media, which was pretty much divided, and some people were saying it was one way or the other. I felt it was a centre-back's challenge. that was bought, that was actually sort of instigated by Salah, who initially, I think, gets the arm in, and then once the arm's there, Ramos knows what he's doing and grabs hold of it and takes him down. But I was just slightly on the side of, you know what, that strong, tough, aggressive, probably over-aggressive defending, but that happens in games, Robin, and you know, unfortunately, Mo Salah's shoulder pops out, and with it, I'm afraid, seemed to go a lot of momentum and drive out of Liverpool.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I think from that point, I think there was a psychological impact on the whole team. Yeah. And Lallana came on, of course, into the game at that point. I thought that Liverpool looked, in terms of the tactical aspect of it, they went deeper. Because, of course, Mo Salah always stays
high. Haven't got the
pace, have you? Yeah, he stays high to give that threat, but then he's not there. Mm. And Lallana came in and came back. So all of a sudden,
Mane switched sides as well, didn't he? Which slightly just changes the thing a little bit.
Yeah, so they just lost, obviously, some momentum there.
Yeah.
And the game flow changed a little bit. And Real Madrid obviously realised that now that they're passing, they got a little bit more time to pass. The pressing wasn't quite the same. And the flow of the game changed.
For sure.
To the next incident. Real Madrid's first goal. Flippin' heck. I mean, first of all, before we talk about the actual... we have said many times, my friend, we've agreed on this, that I think we've agreed that there's three players over the last couple of years, or positions, that have been a problem. Alberto Moreno, left-back's caused issues.
Yeah.
Dejan Lovren at centre-back's caused issues. And the goalkeeper has caused issues. And we haven't been solid on any of these two goalkeepers. And Lars Karius, in the last game, by the way, against Roma, remember the shot that went through his fingers and hit the crossbar? We've seen, I guess that's the third goal. But, I mean, just try and... to tell the listeners, Rob, how, I mean, we know the nerves and everything else, how bad an error that was for Karius when he tries to throw the ball out to a defender and it goes straight onto the foot of Karim Benzema.
It tells me more about what's going on in Karius's mind, that when you see a top goalkeeper, Rob, and we're not being wise after the event, because people can go back on podcasts, and I've said from time, even when he was there, and people saying, well, young De Gea was making mistakes, and da-da-da, and I'm saying, in my opinion, this guy is not good enough. Now, I'm just trying to go back into the mind of being a player, Rob, and what you know, I've never been a goalkeeper, so I can't go there. But in terms of the thought process that's going through this guy's mind, when I see De Gea, when I see Courtois, when I saw Petr Cech at his best, in those goalkeepers, Rob, they're cool, they're calm, they're the most relaxed, laid-back person of the back five.
Do you think that comes from confidence? Like they're confident. They didn't got to rush anything. They're not nervous.
Yeah, confidence is good. I think ability. I think there's no doubt Karius can be a great shot stopper. He's probably a good athlete. He's probably a very good young goalkeeper at this stage in there. But if you don't have all the tools, Rob, that's required in big games, if in big games your heartbeat starts bumping every time the ball comes into the 18-yard box, you got a problem. You have a problem. And that's exactly what I thought Karius had. It was almost like he was a reserve goalkeeper who'd been brought in for this one game because the main goalkeeper was out injured. And he wasn't able to handle it. Not maybe ability-wise, but mentally, he wasn't able to handle the position. So when he gets the ball, he almost panics, Robbie. He almost kind of can't wait to chuck it to his side. And Benzema's almost standing there going, "Really? What? You're gonna try that?" I mean, he didn't even have to do much, Benzema, did he? It wasn't like he had to lift his leg that high, or you know, almost sort of semi-foul the goalkeeper, and you get away with it. It's one of those where you think, "Well, you know, that's a foul." I mean, he just stands there. Slightly lifts his leg, deflects the ball and puts it in the back of the net.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them where I think he caught the ball and I looked away or something, or spoke to somebody, and then all of a sudden, like, what happened?
Yeah.
I mean, I initially thought maybe was he challenging for the ball, but he wasn't. He was a few yards away. It was just, it just smacks of somebody that's, I guess, been found out a little bit. I mean, maybe bigger picture, Rob, I guess after the second error and the Real Madrid third goal. So that put Real Madrid up into the match. And fair play, the Liverpool, you know, great spirit.
Reaction.
Came
great
back
reaction.
In and the set piece.
Mane was excellent, by the way.
Yeah, he was.
He had tried a little bit of little bit of criticism maybe getting to the final, but Coy, he didn't half try.
Yeah, and he got his goal, and Dejan Lovren did well, by the way.
Yeah,
good header
from
Lovren. He gets over the top of Sergio Ramos, who falls to the ground and wants something, and Mane sticks it in at 1-1, and you think, wow, game on, you know? And then the next incident, again, is a remarkable, remarkable wonder goal from Gareth Bale, who came on as a substitute, was disappointed, I'm sure, not to start this game. But what a flipping overhead kick that was. I mean,
really?
Wow.
I mean there's so many things that he has to take on to not only get to that ball, to connect with it in the manner he did, to steer it in the way he did and get the power. I mean, it's ridiculous off a man who's just come on the pitch in a Champions League final, hasn't quite got the pace of the game, and was a little reminder, I think, to some again who've written Bale off and said, oh, maybe he's not this and maybe not that. Wow, still an absolute game changer when he's playing and he's confident, Robin. And again, it's all about confidence, but it was a brilliant, brilliant bit of one of the best goals we've ever seen in Champions League. And when Zinedine Zidane blows out his cheeks and puffs his hands, wow, let me tell you, that's worth a Ballon d'Or right there. I mean, because that was the master. And on a day when Ronaldo was probably a little bit off colour, Christian Bale, even he acting like Christian Bale, Gareth Bale wasn't off brilliant.
To move his body quick enough to scissor the legs quick enough for Marcelo's cross on his right side. That wasn't a long, it wasn't a high loopy cross.
No, there wasn't quite a lot of time between them.
It was quite a flat cross, and for him to time it, it was just one of those moments where, like, wow, did he really just do that? Just on Gareth Bale, Rob. After the game, he talked about, you know, he's got to be playing more minutes. This can't go on. There's been a little bit of hearsay, a little bit of rumours, reports, etc. And there's, of course, Manchester United have been a fan of Gareth Bale for a little while now.
Yeah.
Apparently, reports say that Real Madrid have thrown a price on him of £200 million, which is kind of round about just short of $300 million would be his price, which is which is an incredibly, incredibly high price, an overprice when you consider that in July, in the middle of July, he turns 29.
Yeah,
is that price going to stop him going anywhere in the Premier League?
I think that price is to say to people, if you're serious, come back. If you're not, the price that's there, Rob, $200 million, is Gareth Bale in his prime when he's 26, 25, 26. It's not a Gareth Bale, as you say, who's nearing 30. You're not going to get any return from. He's still shown he's a quality player. He still would be addition to any of the top six in England. He brings something different: goals, power, threat. Knows the English game, so you know there's no worries there. And I can understand why people are sniffing. I think this is one of those where it's almost saying, listen, if you're not serious, if you're not going to come with a decent offer or, you know, a decent package, don't even bother trying, because you're not going to get him for cheap. And another quick one on Gareth Bale, because it'd be hopeful, or it's possible he'll end up in Premier League football. But I just want to talk a little bit about Zidane as well, Rob, because people keep saying about, you know, tactically, I mean, that's three Champions League in succession, which is ridiculous by means. Yeah. But, you know, in games, and I was talking to one of my friends, the amount of subs that he makes, the amount of changes he makes that end up coming good, he's either a very, very lucky man or a lot better coach than we give credit for, because people seem to come on the pitch for him and have an influence in games, whether it's assisting goals, whether it's scoring goals, whether it's shoring things up. He just seems to have a knack of knowing the balance of the game and the dynamic of the game, and throwing somebody on that can just change it in his favour.
Yeah, I think when the biggest asset that he has, the biggest strength that he has, is, of course, of who he is and what he is as a player. So he immediately gets the full and huge respect from everybody that walks in that door. Now, a club like Real Madrid, that's pretty hard for that sort of calibre of player to really, really, really respect and look up to the coach. So above anything else in terms of his tactics, in terms of his substitutions, he's got that from straight away. And his record now, I mean, it's, you know, it's getting a bit crazy. I think four from the last five Champions League titles.
I think I said, do you remember when we were doing the podcast review, and I said, is he going to be known as one of the great players or one of the great coaches? It's starting to get close, isn't it? If he keeps on in this vein.
I mean, is there anybody else, Rob, that had such a stellar career and had such a stellar manager? It's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult.
Struggle. I mean, at that real top level.
Yeah, because he was an incredible, like, yeah, I mean, about best player to ever play the game. He's in the top five.
Yeah, he's up there. He's in the conversation. I mean, Pep, as good a player as he was and won at Barcelona, not quite at that level, obviously proven to be a great coach. Mm. But yeah, it's an interesting conversation, Zidane and what he's done. Yeah. And then we have to move to the third goal, the one that probably put the biggest spotlight on Loris Karius in terms of his mindset, his position as number one goalkeeper in the football club, the questions that have been asked of him, his manager, all sort of culminated in what was a very basic routine error. Yeah. And again, Robert, as the ball's come in, yes, it's moving, so I'm going to give him that. But any decent goalkeeper, if you're not confident, which he didn't look, and obviously we'd seen what happened prior to this, go with the big fists, go with the big hands, and just repel it from goal 10, 15 yards, and we'll live to defend the situation. But even in his mind, Rob, I think he got caught between, oh, it's moving, oh, do I punch it, do I catch it, do I parry it? You know, there were so many voices going on, he does neither of them, and we get the third goal, and all of a sudden the game's gone. He's absolutely distraught. Liverpool know that they're not going to make that up, and all of a sudden, Champions League hopes have died.
I was not surprised one bit when that ball went in.
Yeah,
as soon as Bale striked it, and we've seen him do this many times, Bale, he's got this brilliant technique where, like some of these top players, they can put a little bit of zero spin or a tiny bit of top spin that gives that knuckling situation with the ball. And when it went in the back of it, I was the first one in the pub, and I jumped up and I screamed, you know, he's not good enough, because I knew it was happening. I'm like, not that I knew it was going to go in, but I wasn't surprised one bit when that ball finds its way through him and into the back of the net. It was, I'm not a Liverpool fan, but I'm in this pub, Rob, and it's absolutely chock-a-block.
Yeah.
Everybody in there has been singing the whole, an hour before the blimmin' game, and you just feel for those Liverpool fans.
Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, he's not ready for this level. Just quickly on that, Rob.
Yeah,
just,
go on. Okay, let's get to the tough stuff.
Mm.
Whose fault is it?
Well, that's where I was going to go. You got to point to the manager. Actually, let's hear from the manager, Rob, and we'll talk about him and his role in this, because he was asked afterwards, you know, as he spoke to Dolores Karius yet, and this is what he said after the game.
I have only very, very few words after the game, but yeah, it's nothing. It's nothing to talk in the moment. It's really hard. I really feel for him. That's nobody wants that, and that's the situation. The mistakes were obvious. We don't have to talk about that. It's all clear. He knows it. I know it. You all know it. And now he has to deal with it. We have to deal with it. We will do that. And of course, we will be with him. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, so he has spoken to him. I think it is time to support the young man now. I think as a teammate, if I was a teammate of his, I'd want to support him. I'd want to let him know I'm behind him. I think it's an important time now. It's a big test for the young man. It makes or breaks him, this, Rob. He either can kick on and be remembered as a goalkeeper who made a mistake but then went on to have a really strong career, and it's something we'll talk about. Or he's always going to be known, Rob, and I'm not sure we'll ever see quite the best of him, because it's going to break him and not give him the steel to move on.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of, you know, blaming him, I think you've, in terms of the blame here, I think you've got to look at the manager in terms of trusting the goalkeepers that he's got right now. It's been a little while that people have questioned whether these two are good enough, and whether if they want to go on and do great things, they need a better level goalkeeper. But Jurgen Klopp has trusted these two. At the moment, he feels that Karius is better than Mignolet. In terms of the goalkeeper himself, you know, like, you know, of course, I mean, Liverpool was a great club, and the fans are tremendously supportive of all the players, and he'll get that support. But these errors, Rob, were so, I mean, you know, in terms of, it's not, you know, you could say, you know what, it's not really his fault. He's not at that level. He shouldn't be there. It's the club's fault, the manager's fault, or whatever. He just isn't good enough. That's what you could say. But right? I'm not going to say that because they were such basic errors.
Yeah.
They were so.
Down to the guy. Yeah.
I mean that. But honestly, if any level of professional football of you see in whatever country you're at, whatever level of professional football, that you ain't going to see errors like that. I mean, I would split the blame between the player that had a shocker of a game, and the club a little bit for trusting that he, in a game like that, is going to be good enough. Now, I'm sure they're going to go on, and we can talk about that in the future, to upgrade that level. But yeah. I think, you know, you'd have to split the blame and the reason why it happened.
When you look at the two errors, Robin, and I've intimated again, it's nothing to do with ability. So I think there's always going to be a question mark with Karius when the pressure's on, when big games are on, when it really matters, when the attention's there, when we've said Ronaldo's world-class, because at the very top stage, and Messi and these guys deliver on that big day. They deliver. They win the trophies. They do what's required. Loris Karius is not that level. Now, being a professional footballer, it's not just about your ability and it's how you deal with things, Rob. And when you're away from home and when you're getting stick and when the game's 2-0 down and when these other elements that are beyond ability that gives you the role as a professional footballer. And Loris Karius, there is a question mark. And I've been saying for the whole season, in my opinion, Liverpool have two number two goalkeepers. Yeah. They've got two understudies. Yeah. They haven't got a goal. Dare I say it, Burnley Football Club have got two better goalkeepers than Liverpool. Tom Heaton and Nick Pope, I would say, are better goalkeepers than Loris Karius and Simon Mignolet.
Yeah.
Now, how can you be going into a Champions League final with a goalkeeper who, do you know deep down what some of the players, Rob, and I'm sure it's not something that comes to mind and it's nothing. You just hope he has a good day or hope he doesn't have one of those days. And any time when those things come around, I think you've got problems. So here is my big takeaway, big takeaway on this one. Jurgen Klopp, who we love, Rob, who fits this club, club like hand in glove, can do the press, can play the football, can do the brand, can be a global ambassador, all the things that we like at Liverpool, has moved this football club forward and starting to take them to serious places. Is this guy going to be a serial winner? Can he put the trophies on the table? And my bigger question, Robbie Musto, is, can he like not being loved? We see the hugs, we see the relationship with his players. I think he's been too loyal to Karius. He's also possibly been too loyal. Is he ruthless enough to be the top class managers like Mourinho? We've seen if he has to, Mourinho makes big calls, Rob, big calls, and he doesn't mind. Will Jurgen Klopp make those same big calls? And not maybe get a hug off a player and maybe get a bit of criticism of a player, but go on and be a winner.
Okay, so great question. I think he has made big calls before. And I think if you get on the wrong side of him, he could be a nasty guy. Like, no, you're done. Remember Mamadou Sakho that took liberties with him too much? He made tough decisions with Daniel Sturridge at the start, where people thought that Sturridge should be playing. I'll give him a solution to this, Rob. He sells Simon Mignolet in the summer and brings in a number one. Alisson of Roma, you know, again, rumours right now that so good age, mid-20s, looks the real deal. Mm-hmm. And you've only got one number two, and that's Loris Karius. I think that is the solution. You get an opportunity to not fire the guy on the back of it.
What's the role of your number two then? To come in when?
When Alisson or the number one isn't. He's a number two.
I know.
It's not great.
You've got time
to develop then, Rob.
You're playing in the Champions League quarter final and your number two gets sent off and you got to the semi-final of the Champions League and Karius is to come in. What then? How do the fans feel? How do the players feel? How's the atmosphere that Loris Karius is coming in the semi-final of the Champions League because Alisson's got sent off? I'm not sure, Rob. I think so.
Yeah, but Mignolet's fed up. He's ready to move.
Well, if need be, you can find a good number two. Joe Hart might be your number two. He ain't got anywhere to go at the moment. Go and get your number one.
Right.
Go and get the guy you want.
Right. So you've got to sell one of your one.
And
of your
if I've got to, I'll sell one. I might have to sell them both, by the way. And go and take Pope or go and take somebody else and be my number two.
But that ain't going to happen, because he ain't going to sell both those goalkeepers.
Well, no, but I'm saying, if that's the right decision, Rob, do it. And that's exactly my point with Klopp. He won't because he likes Karius. He bought Karius in.
It's a good show. He might not.
He
might stick with the two of them.
Get them out if they're not good enough, Rob. This is about winning now. This is about, you know, what Liverpool did this season and the bigger picture is it's progress. Champions League football again.
Incredible. Brilliant.
Champions League final against Real Madrid. And for half an hour when their main player was on, we had a game on.
Brilliant.
Okay, fell apart. So let's move forward. Big decision. Now we get a goalkeeper who doesn't make two mistakes. We don't give Real Madrid two goals. Is it a different game? Does it look different? Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So that might be what a big call is, and that's where I'm saying with Jurgen Klopp. Okay, you have to say, Karius, we've had a good time together, and we'll be on Twitter and social media. We've been great friends, but you know what? He's got to go and win some trophies.
Just in terms of Liverpool wrapping up this game now, Rob, and moving forward, they have just signed Fabinho, a defensive central midfield player from Monaco.
Had a little look at him,
24 years of age. Plenty of Champions League experience. One League One with Monaco. I like it. I mean, it's exactly what they needed.
Spot on. Plug in and play. 24 years of age. I had a little look at him, Rob. He's rangy. He's aggressive. He can tackle. He's got good football feet, good football brain. Brazilian international, so you know he's technically smart. Apparently can play at right back as well if you need to. We'll drop him in deep. I mean, just... And do you know what? From Liverpool's point of view and Klopp, and I don't know if it was planned, just good timing. But just when, there's a bit of a negativity.
Obviously, it's been done, isn't it? It's been done, and they're waiting
for
this.
It's great to get him in with Keita now.
Nabi Keita's coming in.
It's looking exciting.
Yeah.
You go and get a goalkeeper, and you go and get maybe another forward to add to the pool up there, Rob. And all of a sudden, it starts to look a lot
stronger.
Better.
I still think another centre-back as well. I still think another centre-half.
I just a quick one of surprise. Alderweireld. Go and get him for 3 years, Rob. Alderweireld and Van Dijk as a back two.
Yeah, because...
All day long, by the way. All day long.
I think Alderweireld is rumoured to be going to Manchester United. Should we move on, mate? Are we done?
Yeah, let's move on to Manchester United, shall we? Because second place finish in the league, top finish since Alex Ferguson left. So progress in that respect. Questions as ever. The style council were out with Jose. Was the style really Manchester United's way? Well, he got the second spot. That was important. He did also allude to, you know, winning a cup as well as important. And the FA Cup was, I think, important to both the clubs who were in it, to Chelsea and to Manchester United. And I remember I was watching this game with some friends, and I actually had a little sneaky for Chelsea, despite them having a horrible last day at Newcastle, despite the Conte talk. And there were two things. One, I just thought Conte isn't going to want to leave English football on a real low down note. If that's the case, all the rumours that he might not be staying. And I just worried about the attacking players of Manchester United. Like, can you flick a switch and all of a sudden turn into the good players that we know you are, with confidence and taking players on? Or might it be a bit of a struggle? Is this thing a little bit of a struggle? And I'm afraid it was the latter rather than the former. I just felt all of the United attacking players never performed anywhere near their ability.
Again, just the setup of the game. I mean, Herrera playing pretty much as a right centre-back. Man United...
Yeah, picking up Hazard off him, wasn't he?
Yeah, so they've often done 4-3-3.
Yeah.
So this basically meant that they were 5-3-2. Mm. So the 3-3 has gone to a 3-2. One less attacking player.
Yeah.
So again, the first kind of move for Mourinho in the lineups and the setup was to be defensive.
We've seen that before, and
it's worked before, and they win the game, and everybody's happy, and everybody heralds Mourinho's tactical genius, and rightly so when it works. But obviously, they didn't get the first goal. There was a struggle after that. You look at United, Rob, on their attack, and we said the same thing all through the season.
Marcus Rashford. well, I mean,
Go on then, you hit Rashford first, and I'll go a bigger picture on it.
Rob, I saw Rashford, I think it was 12 months ago, playing against LA Galaxy, I think the ICC Cup. He led the line and was brilliant. I mean, brilliant. His movement, his joining of play, his understanding, his intelligence, his finishing on the day. And I'm looking at him, talking to a few friends, saying, he's ready to go, this kid. He needs to play first-team football now to develop. And I'm thinking it's a big season for him at Manchester United. When I see him 12 months later in an FA Cup final, the kid looks a little bit scared, lost a little bit of belief, lost his confidence, not sharp, making poor decisions.
He had a stinker in the first half, didn't he?
Yeah, it's almost like it's all gone. And listen, is it that age? Is it a similar age where Harry Kane was breaking into first-team football and going on and scoring 20-plus goals a season? Marcus Rashford is a little bit behind him now, Rob, and if we're not careful, if Manchester United aren't careful, he's not going to develop into the player that he should be.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I thought he got better in the second half, but yeah, I remember writing notes like, wow, what has happened to Rashford with some of his touches and his passing and his decision-making and his crossing? What I would say on the way that they attack, you know, and I rewatched the game only about 3 or 4 days ago just to get another look at it, and their attacking kind of chemistry, creativity, strategy, as normal, was awful. Their width from Valencia and Ashley Young, it's not advanced width, it's deep width.
Yeah.
And then that's really hard to create a goal-scoring opportunity from that sort of position. Now, I don't want to directly compare City's attacking to Man United's.
No.
But what we've talked about a lot, Rob, is City, is that there is an absolute strategy to get in behind those defenders.
Yeah.
Wherever it is, through the centre, or as we've those illustrated areas, many times, the wide areas, just to get in behind. Yeah. You know, not super wide, but
the
kind of where the 18,
spots,
the hot spots we've talked about, those hot zones. Yeah. And when you're in them, then you're good to go. I mean, you're really in situation.
Balls across the box, cutbacks, shots on goal.
Everything. Yeah. United, when you look, like, when you sort of, look at it so analytically, and like, what are they doing to create something to score?
To do. Yeah.
And it's really hard to see what they're trying to do. And you know, in playing for Man United, when you're going to have a lot of the ball in different games, and even this game when they're behind against Chelsea, it just doesn't look very natural and patterned. It's like they're relying on some player to do something special to get them a goal, to win them a game. That happened, to be fair, lots of times in the Premier League to get them to second place. But it's another example for me. It's like, God, they got to have a bit more of a pattern of space, of attacking kind of movements and understanding. I just didn't see it.
I think that's a good point, Rob, and I think we should just explain just to our listeners just in terms of what we mean by that. So just generally in training, there's two parts of training. When the opposition have got the ball, you do your defending work, where you're going to be, how you're going to defend, what lines and how far up the pitch you are. And then once you've got the ball, you do your attacking drill. So those are the things that how you're trying to score your goals. So as you say, who's getting your width, what you run to, and it's repetitive stuff to get some rhythm. And then on a Saturday, when those things start, when the ball goes in a certain area, the rhythm kicks in and people know where they are.
Yeah.
You see it with City. You see it with Liverpool. You see it with Spurs. You see it with the teams.
Sometimes with Chelsea, you know, so much this year.
Yeah,
but
you can see what
Eden
Hazard. But you almost get a sense of what they're trying to do. With Manchester United, I think what we're saying is, we don't really see those patterns so much.
No.
You don't really see what is it they're trying to do.
No.
It's almost like we'll get the ball into Alexis. He can go and do a dribble or something. We'll get it up to the big man, Lukaku. Can hold it up? Can he join somebody in? You know, or Lingard's going to make a run. But it's not as defined. It's not something you see as a rhythm, as a theme. And so you start to question, well, are they doing that work? Or if they are, what kind of work is being done?
I'll tell you what, Robert, it's different, okay? Mourinho's strategy is counter-attacking football. So he is more about, like, this is the way we're going to defend Chelsea. We're going to win the ball off Hazard. I've got my pacey guys up front that's going to counter-attack and use pace in behind. He's done that throughout his whole career. And that's how he does it. He's a reactive coach. So when somebody slips on the ball, Steven Gerrard slips on the ball, his team's ready to pounce. I saw it many times. I remember a game with Spurs where they made a mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a pouncer. He's a reactive coach. He isn't somebody that's going to do those kind of patterns or work on those patterns, because he wants to be incredibly tight defensively, and he's ready for transitions. Transition football is what he's all about, and that's how he gets his goals, and the numbers come through when teams attack more because they're behind, and he scores more on a counter-attack. That's what he does, in my opinion, and that's why he's short. When given possession, he doesn't know how to break a team down.
He'd be disappointed. He didn't win another trophy. He loves to tell us what trophies he wins. He wins. Yep. Put a slight little bit more pressure, I think, pre-season for Manchester United. You know, as long as he's winning, we've generally said the consensus is, you know, we're okay with style if he's bringing trophies. Rob, I'm still looking at this group of players, and I ain't sure. Phil Jones, Chris Smalling. Yeah, they've been there 6 years now. I still ain't sure. If I'm still not sure, that tells me they're not good enough. Eric Bailly, I was sure about. Somehow, the manager didn't seem like he wanted playing. Fellaini is now in a position where he's dictating to Manchester United if he was going to sign or not. Hold on. Marouane Fellaini.
Yeah. Mourinho talked about him. He said, you know, we struggle without Fellaini and Lukaku.
Like he was Neymar or somebody he was talking about. You know what I mean? Anders Herrera, Rob. Anthony Martial, Marcus Rashford.
Yeah, but players, Rob, you're talking about, right? You're saying you're not sure about them. Let's have this right. They were doing great at Man United, and before Mourinho started to take them off the rails a little
finishing,
bit.
They were finishing fifth and fourth, and now they're finishing second.
You know, if a different manager was there working with the team developing the players, would you be saying the same thing? Is it the players?
Possibly
or is it the
not,
manager?
But this manager's here, Rob. He signed a new contract, so that's exactly the point.
Right, but he's got to change.
This manager's here, so he's either got to change him or something's got to happen. Because with this group of players, Rob, it's going to be a struggle. It's absolutely going to be a struggle. Let's quickly give a word for Chelsea as well, because they did get the job done. Wasn't a great end to the season, but it's great to have silverware for them. Eden Hazard came up with a goal. Good run, penalty situation. He sticks it away. Do you see Conte and Chelsea starting the season next season together?
No. I think Mauricio Sarri is going to be there, Rob, from Napoli. Lots of talk. He's left. Officially left Napoli, Sarri now.
Ancelotti's gone there, hasn't he?
Is it confirmed?
Ancelotti,
So I think Sarri would be really interesting. Yeah. Very different. An absolute football guy. I've loved watching, not that I've seen him that much of him this season, his Napoli side. The city, I think the game in City in the Champions League, the first meeting between them, I think. I just remember watching a game, and my buddy...
Yeah, it was a great game, wasn't it?
Oh, my goodness. So that's exciting. And I think Eden Hazard as well, Rob, has hinted that he likes the thought of Sarri coming to Chelsea because of the football. Hazard wants to be in on the front foot all the time, even after the FA Cup final. He said, you know, this is great, but we had to defend a lot. We've got to do better than that. So, you know, when you produce that football, when you produce a team like Napoli that finished second in the league behind Juventus, that, for me, would be a really good move, exciting move. And this is what Chelsea does, Rob. They move on from one guy to the next, and it usually works out, you know, and we might be the same again if Sarri ends up going to Chelsea.
Yeah, could be the case. Plenty of activity, I think, to happen at Stamford Bridge over the summer. Probably manager in, some players in, and players out. We'll keep ahead of that one. Managerial shake-ups, Robbie Musto. Let's quickly run through a few of those. I don't think any more high-profile than at Arsenal. Unai Emery. I now have my Unai Emery pyjamas.
Gosh.
They're not very worn in at the moment.
No, you had to put them on special order.
They were my Mikel Arteta pyjamas up until a week before. And then all of a sudden I had to phone my dress lady and say, oh no, it's Unai is the man.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a bit left field, Rob, wasn't it? They were saying he was 60-1. 10 days before the appointment, like he was pretty much out of the reckoning, and all of a sudden, for some reason, Arsenal got him to the top of the list. Apparently, he interviewed very well and gave him the job.
Yeah, now there was one report that I read, and it showed a story of Arsenal and him being a main target. And this is probably a couple of months ago when it all started. So maybe it's been a big old defensive smoke screen. You know,
deflecting, putting other people up,
and making sure they get their guy and nobody else coming in for him. So but it still was like, oh wow, okay. I mean, okay, my thoughts on it. It's certainly not is certainly not the elite, elite guy that yeah. maybe we expected. Max Allegri, yeah. Luis yeah. Enrique, maybe Jogi Löw that's extended mm-hmm. with the German national team. Antonio Conte is somebody I think you liked from yeah. Chelsea. That, they yeah, would yeah. be the ones that mm. would like absolutely ready to go, kind of no surprise in that. And then the yeah. other side of it, I mean, I always thought it was two groups of managers, the younger guys. It looked like yeah. being Mikel mm. Arteta,
yeah.
Patrick Vieira, I think, with his mm. spoken, Thierry Henry, that sort of category of coach. Mm. And I kind of liked the Mikel Arteta. The more I thought about it, and the more I thought about the connection to the football club, working under Pep, and the search for the great coach that's yet to be,
yeah.
I kind of like that, because the structure's now changed at Arsenal. Mm. The listeners probably know that or should know that.
Yeah.
As a director of football now and a head of recruitment, it's yeah, very different. It's more on a continental now, yeah. Model. And those guys would have fitted in perfectly. But Unai Emery, mm. I like it. I like it. I think when you consider what he's done, we know about the three Europa League Cups
yeah.
wins Seville, in, a, yeah. in the spin with Sevilla.
Yeah.
We know the Valencia twice behind Barcelona and Real Madrid in La Liga,
yeah.
you know, with a team like Valencia. It's a big club, but it's
yeah.
finished not behind yet. Those. That's really, yeah. really good. He was chosen as well, by the way, by PSG. You know, mm. that got, you know, to be their coach. It didn't
yeah,
work out.
Neymar's anywhere,
a
yeah.
tough guy to manage. Yeah. But all those things in mm. terms of what he's done, and also, Rob, I used to cover the league and I watched him on the sideline. He's fired up. So you're
yeah.
going to see it. You're yeah. going to see jumping yeah. up and down. He's fidgety. Mm-hmm. He's non-stop. He's yeah. got that kind of appetite that the fans, I think, will like at Arsenal. Incredibly different to Arsene Wenger's passive yeah. nature on the sideline. It's football. It's front foot football. It's yeah. Attacking football. It's pressing football. It's not slow, silky football. So,
yeah.
so Arsenal fans, don't. It's not. It's going to mm-hmm. be hard-working, really hard-working teams and put teams under pressure. And he's going to be fired up to do well. I kind of like it, mate. I kind of like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, the more you look into
yeah.
to it, what he's done, where he's been, the kind of players he's been. I mean, he's had big players. His age, I thought, was interesting, Rob. So he's not, as you said, that young set, which mm. you are slightly gambling if you go with Patrick, if you go with Mikel Arteta. No, you know, I haven't really been in the game long in terms of managing. This guy, at 46 years of age, has had big clubs, has had success, has won mm. trophies. Mm. I read a couple of articles, because you're always trying to find out a little bit more about the man,
yeah.
that said, by the way, he doesn't mind confrontation. If he's got to go, you know, and upset one or two players, he will do, which I thought, if I'm an Arsenal fan, I like that. I want to hear
but
that.
But on the other side of that, well, let me just interrupt you there. On, mm-hmm. on the other side of that, I mean, he didn't do that with Neymar, did he? Now he
no.
would say that Neymar's different. Neymar controls that football club.
And I
Neymar
would think,
gets,
yeah, that football club is run very
so
differently
by the
owners.
So maybe that is an outlier. But in general... Yeah,
general,
I mean
yeah.
that's what fans, Arsenal fans, will want to hear exactly what you just
exactly.
said.
Exactly, and he's got a good group of players, Rob. There's quality
yeah.
in that Arsenal group.
Yeah.
You know, one or two additions, maybe firming things up with centre back, maybe somebody in central
yeah.
midfield, players who
yeah.
he's worked with over the past.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
of a sudden, that could look
yeah.
very, very different.
Great,
Mkhitaryan, Aubameyang, Lacazette,
yeah, Ozil.
Ozil. I mean, yeah. doesn't get much better than that. Start sorting out the back line, and if he starts well. This could be, you know, an exciting time. And of course, there's always going to be the comparisons to Arsene Wenger, as there is with Sir Alex Ferguson and anybody who takes the Manchester United seat. But I like what I've seen so far from Emery.
Yeah.
I like the press conferences. I like the way he's come in. He wants to play best football. He said, you know, we want to be the best team in the world. That's where we've got to aim. And he's looking for ambition. So it's going to be different. We've been used to nothing else from Arsenal for the whole of the Premier League.
And they need something
era.
Different, don't they? They need
yeah.
something different. They need a balanced team, a bit
course.
more defensive structure, more working in midfield with those front players. They can absolutely do really well.
I would think Arsenal fans are going to go to the first game of the season with a slight skip in the step, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
You know, what we got now? What, you know, as great as the guy leaving has been for the 22
yeah.
years, and as much as he's done, it's like a new era now, and a new belief, I think, at Arsenal, which I think has been important. Mm. Let's move over to East London, West Ham United. They've appointed a manager, Manuel Pellegrini. We know him well from his days at City, won a league title and
yeah.
a league cup last season. I think was always... never quite going to be glamorous enough for Man City, Robert, as their manager. So was always under pressure, was always being sort of criticised in terms of what he did. But good, safe, old pair of hands to steady the ship at West Ham. or maybe not by that reaction.
Yeah, I just, you know, the two clubs is really interesting, Rob, right? Mm. And I'm gonna give the same kind of analogy for both these football clubs. I want to talk about the foundation. We're going to talk about Big Sam and Everton, that I think their foundation is stronger. West Ham's isn't.
And foundation just, of players?
Yeah, just foundation of the club, of the playing squad right now. Is West Ham United foundation strong enough for a manager that wants to come in and play? I mean, he's already said it. He wants to play attacking football.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no question he's done a brilliant work in the Premier League, but he's never worked at a club that's got a squad that's struggled at times to look like they were Premier League level. You know, they flirt with relegation, of course, right towards the end, really.
Yeah.
You know, we know about the situation with the club and the fans and the board and how they feel. It's a difficult club to coach at. I don't know about his age, but at this stage of his career, is he ready to handle some of that crap that's going to go on, you know, in the back room and the supporters feeling? Is a squad good enough to play the football that he wants to play? Mm. I just think there's an element of risk for me. It's a dangerous appointment. It could be really, really good. And, of course, we hope it's really, really good for West Ham, playing some great football at that stadium, packing out the place. It'll be great. I just worry about the foundation, Rob. Is it a little bit brittle to go and try and jump to a point where you're going to go from really poor football and struggle to stay up to something that's expansive, enjoyable, and ultimately successful? I'm not sure.
It's interesting. You hit a point that sort of... something I've been mulling over with when I sort of review the season, start thinking about teams and for next season and that. And I think of teams like Everton and I think of teams like West Ham. And in some respect, I think they get hamstrung by what you talked about, the foundation a little bit and the style and history. That, you know, Everton have been this great football team of the past that won the title and played in Europe. And West Ham was, you know, the academy where, you know, it was... players were just coming out of a conveyor belt and things like that. And I was thinking to myself, you know what? Burnley Football Club last season, no one was talking about academy and style. And I know there's a change, but they finished seventh in the league. Mm. So there's something between where Everton are now with the players they've got. They've not got Bracewell and Reed and Sharp and all those great players they had from back in the day to be that team who could tell. West Ham aren't the Bobby Moores and the Jeff Hurst and all those great players going through to the Rios, and they're a different group now. Sometimes I find that style and that history is holding them back. First and foremost, Pellegrini has to go in and make this team competitive again. Get them mid-table.
He's not used to that, though, Rob.
Security.
And I agree. I agree. You know what? I thought that West Ham, and these two clubs, I think because that foundation wasn't strong enough, I think they should have stuck with David Moyes if David Moyes wanted to stay. No. So we don't know the actual reason. I would have kept David Moyes to kind of strengthen a little bit and get him a little bit more solid in the Premier League. And I would have changed Sam Allardyce at Everton because I believe the foundation there is a lot stronger, a better quality of squad. Of course, a lot more money going to go in. They've restructured as well. There's a new director of football gone in there as well. The Dutch guy
Brand,
has gone in
Brand,
there.
Yeah.
So I that's what I feel. I think Moyes should have stayed. I think Sam should have left. Of course, Sam has gone, left the football club. Mm. So are you saying, Rob, so you would have made the switch of Pellegrini from David Moyes if both guys wanted the job?
I would have made the switch. Whether Pellegrini would have been my man, Rob,
Why would you have switched Moyes?
I think David Moyes had. I just think the future for West Ham. If I'm a West Ham fan turning up at that football club next season, I'm not expecting much more than 15th or 16th spot. Now, whether that's why I should be thinking, that's fine. Whether I'm going to sell enough season tickets, whether that's my ambition, whether they're going to spend money, I want a little bit more. And I don't mind finishing 15th or 16th with a new coach who's going to start develop. I want the next, and I'm not saying he's easy to find, I want the next Pochettino. I want the next Marco Silva before he's gotten a whole lot. These coaches out there, and Cal and I had a slight disagreement where he said, you know, you've got to be careful what you wish for. You know, some teams make changes. I'm not saying that, listen, the teams that made changes, in my view, Whether they made changes for the right reason, maybe went for the wrong man. Are teams doing their homework, finding out about coaches? Our teams got a network across Europe, across the world. You're talking, Rob, about a Premiership football club. It's a multi-million dollar business. That you're handing the keys to someone and saying, you take it for. No, do your homework. Find out about the guy. Is there a youth coach somewhere who's got the style, who deserves an opportunity? That's what football clubs should be doing. And then you get a guy who brings a bit of ambition, who brings a bit of life, who brings a bit of hope. As a West Ham fan, I don't want to be in a relegation fight year on year.
But Moyes has proved Everton. He took him to a great situation from struggling in the Premier League to a strong position.
Can he be a front, more of a front foot kind of manager?
I think he would have progressed to that point. I think he put out fires. He did the job this season, and because of what you've seen him do at Everton to great success, I just feel the foundation. I just think it's okay getting your next fantasy manager. Is the team ready to be that expansive and that confident that they can go and finish top half and play good football?
I think David Moyes and Sam Allardyce have almost become one in the same guys to get you out of trouble. I mean, my question would be, would David Moyes get any other Premier League job if it become available? I'm not so sure, Rob.
I think he would.
He might do late in the season to keep someone up.
Yeah.
But I'm saying at the start of the season, when everybody's ambitious and everybody's talking about what we're going to do in the next season, looking ahead, I'm not sure David Moyes gets any other Premier League job.
Wow. I just think that he would have deserved more time there to build something, to repair some cracks in that club that's appeared over the last couple of years and crack on. But anyway, listen, mate, we've gone on long about that. Just quickly on Everton's the new man, is Marco Silva going to be the right guy? It looks like
obviously they're making sure, which I don't mind. They're taking their time. Obviously, there's Michel Brandt come in. He's I've seen him doing a few interviews in terms of restructuring the whole club. Yep. He's going to have a big saying thing. So maybe it's making sure that relationship's right and all the touch points are there. So I've got a problem with that. And if Marco Silva is the man, I'm going to be really interested in him, Rob, because we saw 6 months at Hull that was looked good, but Hull went down. We see a start of things at Watford that started really well at the start of this season, then fell off. Some are saying the Everton thing maybe caught his attention. If he does go to Everton, he'll have a decent foundation, as you say. He'll probably get a bit of money to spend, and he's getting a club that's pretty restructured, that's kind of ready to go. Yeah. I think this is now his real test. This is when we find out if this guy is as good as he thinks or not.
Yeah, I agree with that. If he's going to be the man, I think with this guy taking over that position, maybe he's having a little look around, Rob. Maybe he's just let's not rush into
that's
this.
Okay. You know,
and that's absolutely
what I'm
that's
saying,
okay.
Rob.
Yeah, yeah, but you're right. I think we'd love to see Marco Silva go in there and with the right situation, the right club. Go on then, show us how good you are. But yeah, we'll have to see on that one. Should we move on to the promoted clubs, our last little piece here?
Yeah, let's have a little chat about the teams we're going to see next season in the Premier League. Well, Wolverhampton Wanderers, I think we all kind of expected them. They were setting the pace.
They look really
good.
Play good
football as well, Rob, to get up. Yeah. We know these talk about with some of the ownership and I think the agent who's involved, is it Mendes, who's getting players in and out. So we'll see how the summer goes for them. Expect one or two decent players to land in there.
Yeah, I think so. This Nuno Espirito Santo is the coach there, and they love him at Wolves. And again, if some of our listeners are not familiar with Wolverhampton Wanderers, proper club, big club, big stadium, nice stadium, kind of historic.
Good history,
really is a Premier proper League club really. Yeah. So it's going to
be great. We'll enjoy being in the Premier League, and the blueprint's been laid for promoted teams to stay up. So, you can have a go and you can stay up. We'll look for Wolves. Cardiff City, Neil Warnock. We get Neil Warnock back again. Thought I would see Neil. You know what?
Gosh.
Credit to this fella, mate.
Absolutely.
People keep pushing him down and he keeps bobbing his head back to the top. He'll be back again and we'll have a few things to say and learn. And Cardiff hopefully will have learnt from their lessons last time, Rob. They didn't have a very good go at it last time. They were up with Vincent Tan. Yeah. It was Solskjaer, wasn't it, who was manager that time around. They brought in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and he had a bit of a struggle, didn't he, with Cardiff. But should have learnt experience with Warnock, who's not always had a great time in the Premier League, thinking of his last time at Crystal Palace. But he's wily. he'll be looking to get some players.
Will he get given the full blimmin' season, Rob? Because that's what happens, isn't it? That's what's going to happen. He's going to go in the Premier League, and they'll be like, you know what, you did great to get us here, and then maybe give him a few months. If they're towards the bottom of the league,
November,
there'll be a change there.
November, yeah. Sam Allardyce on the phone, in you come, Sam. Oh, your mate David Moyes might be back in the Premier League.
Oh, blimey.
But
let's be fun to see him back in the league, absolutely. And Fulham, they beat Villa in the playoff final. The other Saturday,
you know,
Tom Kearney scored a
winning
goal.
Good football, you know, Fulham, Rob. I've watched the games. Don't half get it down and play. Across the two games, they were the better team, I have to say, across the two matches against Philly. Even though Villa had more experience, a little bit more power and maybe know-how. Steve Bruce on the side, John Terry leading on the pitch. It was nice. It was almost a victory for football, I think, Fulham getting through.
Yeah, and I think everybody's excited about Ryan Sessegnon, this 18-year-old lefty that can play left-back, left-wing. He's got 16 league goals this season. He looks a brilliant player. I'm always, you know, interested as well. Look at the front players. Mitrovic from Newcastle United.
Yeah.
Rob. I think he got 12
in
20.
Loan,
What is, does he stay? Is he good enough? He struggled a little bit at Newcastle United to score the goals in the Premier League. But you're right. A good footballing side. They came strong, came powerful, and a brilliant little club in it, Fulham. Good memories of playing
special
there. Actually, that's bad.
Special little place.
Yeah, I got my lip split there with an elbow in the face there. So yeah, maybe some bad memories as well. But no, it's good. It's good that they're up, and three teams that we look forward to seeing. But particularly Fulham. You know, I think, you know, good footballing side, bounce back again. We'll see what they do next season.
Yeah, Wolves, Cardiff and Fulham join us in the Premier League next season. And, well, that's been plenty from us, Robbie Musto, but we want to hear from you, our listeners. First, we'd love you to rate and review the show by downloading the Two Robbies on Apple Podcasts. Tell us what you like, where we can improve, but more importantly, tell us what team you support and why, and we'll read out the best responses on our next podcast. So, in the end, Salah's shoulder in Karius craziness cost Liverpool in the Champions League final. That's a domestic and European wrap-up from us. But look out for Two Robbies World Cup podcasts after all the big games in this summer's football party. We'll be starting with a preview in early June. All the top teams, the top squads and any dark horses. But we're signing off for now. I'm Earl, he's Musto, together with the Two Robbies. Thanks for listening and bye for now.
It's officially grilling season at the Home Depot. So don't miss Memorial Day savings on grills happening now, so you can celebrate with a backyard barbecue for the whole block. Step up your grill game and serve up a feast with the Next Grill 4-Burner Gas Grill, with durability to last summer after summer. On special buy, only $199. Get ready for a whole summer of entertaining at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.